New York's long-term decarbonization strategy. However, RNG deserves particular attention as a near-term strategy based on its ability to facilitate necessary improvements in organic waste management, reducing methane emissions, and providing carbon-neutral energy. RNG is included as an important greenhouse gas reduction strategy in climate plans in a number of jurisdictions, including in E3's June 2020 analysis, which highlights the role of bioenergy-based electricity in New York. New York will also need to achieve substantial reductions in methane emissions from sources such as landfills, wastewater, and farms. The anaerobic digestion of organic materials and subsequent production of biogas and renewable natural gas will play a necessary role to this end as part of New York State's next-generation waste management infrastructure. Organic waste contains carbon, which is part of the near-term carbon cycle, meaning that all CO2 emissions from RNG are carbon neutral or biogenic. Furthermore, looking at the life cycle of RNG production and use, there's a massive climate benefit where facilities capture methane, which would otherwise be emitted directly into the atmosphere, often making waste-derived bioenergy carbon negative, in other words, more beneficial than carbon neutral. The concept of RNG and biogas embodies the idea of a circular economy and will help minimize the impact of large-scale infrastructure build-out and material extraction required to implement other resources. In light of these benefits, we appreciate the Council's continued consideration of how this resource can be used to achieve simultaneous benefits in the waste and power sectors in support of New York's aggressive greenhouse gas reduction goals. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Sam. Next will be Timothy Judson, followed by Taylor Scarpa.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Oh, great. Well, thanks to the panel for the opportunity to make comment today. My name is Timothy Judson, and I'm the Executive Director of the Nuclear Information and Resource Service. We're a national environmental organization that works with communities around the country to advance a rapid, just transition to 100% renewable, carbon-free, nuclear-free energy. I'm also a co-founder of the Alliance for a Green Economy in New York and a participant in multiple PSC proceedings regarding nuclear reactors and renewables since the late 90s. I'm also a contributor to the U.S. Climate Action Network's Vision for Equitable Climate Action and a representative for USCAN to the Green New Deal Network and the Thrive Agenda for a just and equitable economic renewal in response to the intersectional crises of COVID, climate justice, and racial injustice. Today, you know, we were really encouraged to see the really detailed planning that the panel is engaged in regarding the phase out of fossil fuel generation in New York State, and also want to encourage the panel to take on the urgent need for New York to plan for the phase out of the four upstate nuclear reactors. These are some of the oldest and most uneconomic nuclear power plants in the world, actually. The Nine Mile Point and Ginna reactors are two of the three oldest reactors in the U.S. A number of those reactors would have closed by now, except for the $7.6 billion nuclear subsidy that the PSC enacted with the Clean Energy Standard in 2016. There are enormous climate and environmental justice opportunity costs to this program, and it was really enacted under the fog of imminent reactor closures that the state really just hadn't planned for, and political pressure from upstate communities that had suffered from decades of deindustrialization, unemployment, and disinvestment. But this program has really been a missed opportunity to direct investment toward accelerating renewables, energy efficiency, grid modernization, and electrification. The nuclear subsidies have cost New York ratepayers over $2 billion over the last 4 years and are on track to total $7.6 billion by the time the program expires in March 2029. That is, in fact, the year that the operating licenses for the Nine Mile Point 1 and Ginna reactors expire. The PSC never conducted an analysis of alternatives to the ZEC program, although ample information was presented in the CES proceeding. But when compared to the cost of renewable energy credits to meet the 50% renewable energy target in the CES, the nuclear bailout was up to six times less cost effective toward meeting the 2030 emissions goal. Just on the face of it, the $7.6 billion that support the continued operation of these four reactors through 2029 was three times more than the cost of renewable energy credits for new renewables to meet the 50% standard. In addition, there was a study presented by environmental groups conducted by Synapse Energy Resources of the cost of an energy efficiency standard. and the synapse.
I apologize, Timothy. We're unfortunately at time, and we've got a list of number of folks that we need to get through. So please do, if you have additional comments, please do send them to the PowerGen panel at dps.newyork.gov. Next is Taylor Scarpa, followed by Renee Vogelson.
Hi, thank you so much for the opportunity to comment today. My name is Taylor Scarpa, and I'm a student at Syracuse University, as well as a legislative associate for the New York Public Interest Research Group. My comments address two major points of concern, gas and nuclear energy. To protect residents of New York and meet the ambitious climate goals set forth by the Climate and Community Investment Act, gas plants or nuclear plants can no longer be part of New York's energy future. New York must have a just transition to a 100% renewable energy, which means increasing sources such as wind, solar, and geothermal. The power generation panel should put forth a 100% renewable energy plan to the Climate Action Council for consideration. Nuclear energy is not clean, safe, or renewable. Nuclear energy is not environmentally or financially sustainable. Additionally, nuclear energy is a significant threat to public safety, especially as New York's existing power plants age out. Radiation is given off during power generation, which harms both the environment and individuals. And according to the U.S. Academies of Science, there is no safe amount of exposure to radiation. More so, the Associated Press found that 2/3 of nuclear power plants had released unauthorized radioactive tritium leaks. There is no feasible plan to protect communities from this unwanted exposure. Thus, nuclear radiation must be completely eradicated. As nuclear energy becomes more expensive, especially in New York, where we have 4 aging nuclear power plants, wind and other renewable resources remain more affordable. By transitioning to renewable energy instead of relying on nuclear power plants, there would be enough saved to allocate more funds to eliminating additional fossil fuel generation. The CLCPA requires that New York moves from its current 27% renewable energy to 70% renewable energy by 2030 and net zero greenhouse gas emissions by 2050. If New York does not halt new fracked gas power plants, decades of fossil fuel reliance will be ensured. The permitting, licensing, sitting, and building of new plants directly conflicts with New York's climate goals. Methane from natural gas is a major greenhouse gas polluter. It's an extremely potent greenhouse gas during its 20-year shelf life, many times more damaging as a heat-trapping gas over its lifetime than carbon dioxide. The best strategy to reduce methane emissions is to halt fossil fuel infrastructure. This includes infrastructure like fossil fuel power generation plants, pipelines which promote more extraction, compressor stations that vent and leak gas, and storage facilities that pose grave explosion risks. In fact, carbon emissions from oil and natural gas have grown in recent years due to increased use. These actions are important to me as a young adult because they directly impact my future and the future of our environment. There is not a sustainable real climate change now. The possibility for a planet for my generation or generations to come is very dismal. Thank you.
Thank you, Taylor. Next is Renee Vogelsang, followed by Kim Frazek.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Great. My comments should be within the 2-minute time frame. So thank you to the members of the panel today. And thank you for your presentation and taking our comments. My name is Renee Vogelsang, and I'm the coordinator of a campaign called Beyond Indian Point. Some of our core members include Alliance for a Green Economy, Frack Action, Food and Water Watch, and the Nuclear Information Resource Service, who you just heard from. I'm submitting comments today on behalf of our campaign to advise the Climate Action Council to develop a plan that transitions us off of gas and nuclear power and onto 100% renewable energy and energy efficiency in New York. I'm also a former co-convener of the New Yorkers Against Fracking Coalition, a statewide movement made up of hundreds of organizations, faith-based groups, over 1,500 businesses, as well as scientists, health professionals, elected officials, and others. Gas is not clean, safe, or renewable. From cradle to grave, gas is dangerous for our water, land, homes, communities, and the climate. The process of hydraulic fracturing, or fracking, is currently the primary method used to obtain natural gas. Across the U.S., fracking has contaminated water, made families sick, polluted the air, caused environmental ruin, exacerbated climate change, and turned communities upside down. Drilling and fracking release and leak tremendous amounts of methane into the atmosphere. Methane is 86 times more potent as carbon dioxide at disrupting the climate over 20 years and 34 times more potent over 100 years. While New York has banned fracking, the state and utilities are still highly invested in fracked gas infrastructure across the state. We are riddled with hundreds of existing and proposed pipelines, compressor stations, gas plants, and waste storage facilities, which are vulnerable to explosions and leaks that put environment, wildlife, communities, and the climate at risk. Burning gas in buildings for heating and cooking is not only a threat to climate, but also to human health. Gas stoves, especially unvented, can be a primary source of indoor air pollution. Nuclear also is not clean, safe, or renewable. From cradle to grave, nuclear is dangerous for our water, land, homes, communities, and the climate as well. There is currently no viable plan for how to store highly radioactive nuclear waste safely. Uranium mining and the entire nuclear fuel chain generate massive amounts of radioactive and toxic waste, which will be hazardous to human health and the environment for over a million years. Indigenous Black, people of color, and rural low-wealth communities bear most of the burden. Meanwhile, nuclear power plants carry the risk of catastrophic accidents which spread radioactive materials across thousands of square miles, permanently contaminate land, and require widespread evacuation and displacement. In New York, this is a key reason why the state has fought to shut down Indian Point, which sits near New York City, a region that would be impossible to effectively evacuate in the case of a nuclear meltdown. In reference to Indian Point,
I apologize, Renee. We're fortunately are over.
I have two more paragraphs left.
I'm sorry. We have over 15 and more speakers that we have to fit in today. Next is Kim Frasick, followed by Robert Wood.
Hi. Thank you so much for the public comment period. My name is Kim Frasick. I'm the director of Sane Energy Project, and we're representing 13,000 New Yorkers across the state on this call today. I'm making two points today. One, implement a ban on all new fossil fuel generating facilities. And number two, urge the DEC to make regulations that prevent any existing plant from increasing emissions starting right now instead of kicking the can down the road. Our members work in their communities to fight fossil fuel infrastructure and move to a distributed and equitable renewable energy system for power and heating and cooling and cooking. We believe that energy is a human right and therefore should be legislated into our system of governance as a service to the people in our democracy and should not be a commodity owned by corporate interests. That being said, when corporate interests have a heavy weight in our system, that our communities are suffering with underrepresentation, debts, and health issue. This is why New Yorkers organized for years to draft and pass the Climate Leadership and Community Protection Act, which you're here to administrate. One of the communities that we work with is White Pine Community Farm, an organic farm growing food and medicine to serve rural populations, elders, and hospitals. And without their consent, Cricket Valley Fracked Gas Power Plant was built, which is now poisoning their air, water, and land just adjacent to where they grow and serve healthy food for the region. We also see a result of energy being commodified is that many New Yorkers are suffering with billions of dollars in utility debt. So I just want to lay out how important your job is here. And that we have experienced our state agencies like the Public Service Commission, the DEC, and NYSERDA drag their feet on making meaningful change to a renewable energy future. And this kicking the can down the road process and over-processing this discussion, which is a predatory delay, a tactic used by extractive corporations that don't want to risk their profits. We have to move New York in service to humanity and our ecosystem, which does not include either nuclear hydrogen waste gas, which they're calling renewable natural gas, as false solutions. So I just want to reiterate our two points: to implement a ban on all new fossil fuel generating facilities and make the DEC pass regulations that prevent any plant from increasing emissions and start that process now. Thank you.
Thank you, Kim. Next is Robert Wood, followed by Joel Harrington.
Thank you. Hi, my name is Robert Wood. I'm a concerned citizen asking you today to implement an immediate ban on fracked gas infrastructure for power generation. For decades, fracked gas has been framed in political and cultural discourse as the better, cleaner alternative to oil and coal, helping to lessen the impact on the climate. Utilities such as National Grid have gone so far in current marketing campaigns to brand fracked gas as clean. Yet we know now, thanks to research by scientists such as the Council's own Robert Howarth, that when fracked gas's upstream emissions are taken into account, this framing crumbles. Because methane as a greenhouse gas is 86 times more powerful in the short term than CO2, it means that when as little as 3.2% of methane leaks, gas is as bad for the climate as burning coal. It should humble us all to know that Howarth's latest research shows leakage rates of nearly four times that amount. This is all to say that, at least in terms of climate impact, what is being deliberated here today might as well be whether New York State should continue building out coal. This is fact, not hyperbole. We must disabuse our imaginations of the idea that a colorless, odorless gas is in any way our friend, if only of convenience. We can choose to put this out of mind, much as we choose to forget about the residents of Pennsylvania who can't drink their water because of fracking, or we can choose to listen to the science, popular opinion, and the people suffering from these choices. This means stopping the practice of evaluating individual gas projects as discrete entities responsible only for emissions from localized combustion, with no connection to the upstream emissions or even cultures of permissibility that they encourage and enable. Utilities and energy companies will bend over backwards to try and prevent this, burying upstream emissions data in footnotes, manufacturing supply shortages, and spouting bromides about hydrogen and gas as a bridge fuel. Yet it is the responsibility of this council to acknowledge that the motivating factors behind these efforts are returns on equity, not returns that could ever be enjoyed by the public forced to live with and pay for these backward projects. It is also the responsibility of the council to acknowledge the impossibility of meeting the emissions reductions requirements of the CLCPA with expanded gas infrastructure. As a recent report from Synapse put it, even if the only emissions that remain in the state in 2050 are from fossil gas, sales would have to fall by more than 20% to meet the 85% reduction requirements of the CLCPA. There is quite simply no room for more gas in New York State, and that is why I ask you to do what is right and implement an immediate ban on gas-generated power generation. Thank you.
Thank you, Robert. Next is Joel Harrington, followed by Jan Pablo Velez.
Good afternoon, Joel Harrington. I'm head of public policy in the Eastern U.S. region for NLX North America. We are a large renewable energy developer in New York and are currently developing several energy storage projects in New York City, the most recent of which is our project at the Barclays Center in Brooklyn. NLX strongly supports the PowerGen Advisory Panel's recommendations regarding energy storage, in particular, increased funding for energy storage deployment. And we agree that storage will play an integral role in New York's mission to decarbonize. We have two recommendations that we hope the panel will consider and include to the Climate Action Council. One is the bridge incentive, and two is a clean dispatch, developing a clean dispatch standard. We commend the DPS staff, the PSC, and NYSERDA for initiating and managing the energy storage bridge incentive program since its inception nearly 2 years ago. And the bridge incentive was meant to cover the gap between the total costs, including both hard costs and soft costs of deploying a storage project in New York and the revenues that a storage project could earn. On the retail side, the bridge incentive has acted as intended and enabled the deployment of new projects. And moreover, even with a decreasing per megawatt dollar value for the bridge incentive, there's high demand and projects are economic. Unfortunately, there's no funding left for the retail bridge incentive in most areas of the state. And while the gap has decreased between costs and revenues, a bridge incentive is still necessary. Without it, storage project development in New York, especially in the downstate area where storage is most needed, will dry up, and developers will seek opportunities in other markets. So therefore, we support a recommendation and respectfully request that enough total dollars be allocated to the bridge incentive program so developers know that when they're starting a project now, they can depend on funding. Lastly, we recommend a clean dispatch standard, which is a market mechanism designed to shift clean energy to peak and reduce demand at peak, and thereby decreasing emissions and costs. Any eligible resource that generate, dispatch, or discharge energy during a seasonal peak period will generate a clean peak energy certificate. And these certificates can be sold to retail electricity suppliers, which are required to purchase a certain amount each year to meet a minimum standard obligation. We also think that this recommendation is also in line with environmental justice goals in the state to help keep New York's peaker plants from producing harmful emissions. Thank you.
Thank you, Joel. Next is Juan Pablo Velez, followed by Zhongkai Wang.
Hi, can everyone hear me?
Yes, I can.
Perfect. Thanks so much for having me on today. I am the co-founder of an advocacy group called Friends of Columbia Solar, based in Columbia County. They're supporting the Shepherd's Run Solar Farm, which is a 60-megawatt solar farm that's being planned for a community and has drawn a lot of NIMBY opposition. As we all know, we have 15 to 20 years to make all of our electricity clean. That needs to happen at the same time that we electrify all buildings and cars in the state, which make up 2/3 of our emissions. That will roughly double the amount of power we need. So given that backdrop, we propose an aggressive focus on scalable renewables and a laser-like focus on removing obstacles to scalability. The first one being technological. If you solve the intermittency problem of renewables with batteries, you really break the bank. They're really designed for smoothing out power supply, you know, overnight when it's dark, but not really across seasons. According to Dr. Richard Perez from SUNY Albany, you can solve this through overbuilding, where you build 50% more wind and solar than you need, and then you throw it away during the summer. It's counterintuitive, but it's much cheaper. Second, I would be very pessimistic about distributed solar because we can't directly control the decisions of millions of households and businesses to put up panels. Third, we really shouldn't make the problem harder by limiting nuclear at this time. We should get rid of all fossil fuels and then get rid of nuclear. Lastly, and probably most importantly, the main impediment to utility-scale solar and wind will be community opposition. We've seen that everywhere already. We see it in our community, and we should absolutely assume the worst. Two solutions: get as much of the solar out of the way of communities, so you just neuter the problem from the get-go. We can do that by potentially putting the panels on transmission, on right-of-ways for transmission lines, gas lines, railroads, highway medians. That gets us 60% of the way to the 360 square miles of solar that we probably need, according to Dr. Perez. And it would just require brokering deals with those entities versus town by town. And lastly, we should make communities automatically benefit from solar farms through cheaper power and lower taxes and direct payments, because right now a lot of people feel like they have to take on all the burden, but ask like, wait, if we have so much local electricity, why don't we get cheaper power? Why isn't this benefiting our town directly? Thank you so much.
Great. Thank you, Juan Pablo. Next is Zhongkai Wang, followed by Garrett Bruhaug.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Yeah, my name is Zhongkai Wang, and I'm a student at NYU Gallatin and an intern at 350 NYC. And I want to talk about demand response programs. They are becoming more important as they help to reduce investments on seldom used infrastructures and reliance on dispatchable generation. So I suggest the panel to take a look at French electric company EDF's Tempo Tariff Program and Maryland Smart Energy Reward Program. Both of them are successful residential demand response programs. Tempo Tariff started in 1996. By 2018, Tempo Tariff had 10 million customers. The entire France has a 67 million population. The company divided the days of the year into 22 red days, 43 white days, and 300 blue days. Also, within a day, electric price is divided by peak and off-peak. In the 300 blue days, Tempo Tariff users experienced a 40 to 30% decrease in electric price compared to other users. And in white days, users have to pay slightly higher electric prices on peak periods. In red days, especially during the peak period, electric price is 5 times higher than usual. However, the 22 red days are scattered between November and April, mixed with the cheaper blue days. Besides, there are no red days during the weekend, so users do not have to worry about the potential inconvenience it may bring. As of September 15, 2020, Tempo users save 63 gigawatts hour per year, which is equivalent to the annual electricity consumption of 13,400 households and 42,000 electric vehicles. On average, customers have saved 10% on their electricity bill, which can be significant, especially considering the reliance on electric heating during the harsh winters in France. And smart energy reward programs in Maryland, launched after the federal and Maryland government supported all BGE users to install new digital smart meters. The company expects to announce 5 to 10 energy saving days every summer, selected when the peak load is expected to reach an ultra high level. During the period, the company will notify users one day in advance via email or text message. During the event, users who save 1 kilowatt hour of electricity can enjoy a subsidy of $1.25. The company will auction the reduced load following the rules in the power market to get consumption based on market value. The program has proven to be effective, and only less than 1% of users opt out of the program. Users
thank
also
you. Thank you, Feng Kai. I apologize. We have to keep tight on time, so I apologize to cut you off. Next is Garrett Bruhaug, followed by Charlie Feuerman.
Hi, can everyone hear me?
Yes, I can.
Great, thank you. My name is Garrett Bruhaug. I'm a PhD student at the University of Rochester in upstate New York. I primarily wanted to comment about nuclear energy and its inclusion. I was pleased to see that you guys actually had some slides including nuclear energy and have noted the help, the benefit that it can provide. I think we really need to evaluate the effect of the ZECs, the zero carbon or zero emissions credit, long before the 2030 date, because as was noted before, some of the reactors in upstate New York will run out on their licenses before that date, and we cannot let clean, firm power go out. Unlike what was stated by some previous commenters, nuclear is a solution for climate change. It is included in both MIT and IPCC UN reports, and it is the only way to fully decarbonize. Without nuclear, New York will fail. We will not fully decarbonize in time. Thank you.
Thank you, Garrett. Next is Charlie Feuerman, followed by Jen Metzger.
Okay. Hi, I'm Charlie. I'm a senior in high school from Queens, and I want to share with you what it's like for me. There's a large number of students in my grade who really care about the environment. When I was asking my girlfriend whether she wanted to have kids in the future, she said something like, well, having kids is terrible for the environment, so no. This attitude is shared by almost everyone in my friend group, and it's not out of the ordinary for me to hear a sentiment like that. I'll just read you a quote from Jonathan Farrar's book, We Are the Weathered. The four highest impact things an individual can do to tackle climate change are eat a plant-based diet, avoid air travel, live car-free, and have fewer children. I want 5 kids. My friends can't envision a future where we decarbonize in time, a future of freedom, where they can imagine their family. It can't come down to this. Where's the justice? I firmly believe that the evidence shows that utilizing nuclear, we can decarbonize in time. The IPCC reports urge us to more than double our current nuclear capacity, not shut plants down. Indian Point alone prevents the release of 12.7 million tons of carbon each year. How much more can we save by building more plants? And when we shut down Indian Point Unit 2, there's a direct increase in use of gas. And if we shut down Unit 3, again, more gas. Everybody's against gas. Gas is dirty. We can't do it. Please advise the Climate Action Council to include nuclear in our energy infrastructure. Please evaluate nuclear's potential well before 2029. Please consider next generation technology. My friends and I could have a future. Thank you.
Thank you, Charlie. Next is Jen Metzger, followed by Isaac Mattu.
Hi, thanks so much. My name is Jen Metzger. I am a former state senator, co-sponsor of the Climate Leadership and Community Protection Act, and member of the Senate Climate Working Group that worked on that legislation. And also, full disclosure, I also work with Bette Abroad, one of your panel members. but I just wanted, I didn't plan remarks, but I did attend the earlier meeting and just wanted to make a few really brief comments. First of all, I just wanted to, you know, throw my support behind the moratorium on new fossil fuel infrastructure. You know, I believe that it is just really inconsistent with the spirit of the legislation that we passed to build new infrastructure with a useful life of 50 years or more when we have to be done with our reliance on fossil fuels by then. And I appreciated Kit Kennedy's comments about, making sure that your panel's recommendations are presented in a way that conveys that that's the majority of opinion of your panel. I also wanted to just briefly mention the importance. I'm really appreciative of all the recommendations on community benefits. I was in local government for many years before coming into the state Senate and working on climate issues for many years. And I can tell you that it's just for us to reach our goals, it's going to be really important for communities to feel like they have a stake in this, that they, we can't really just force it down the throats of communities. They have to feel like they're a part of this. I really appreciated Stephen's comments earlier about, a public awareness, public information campaign. I think the state has to invest a lot of money in that to bring everyone on board. And I also think that we really have to strongly consider local ownership opportunities together with large scale, utility scale renewable investments. Again, so the communities feel like they have a stake in it, and also local ownership. You know, there have been studies showing that that communities benefit more when there is local ownership. And finally, I just want to emphasize the critical importance of prioritizing distributed generation. I think that we should go well beyond the 6-megawatt goal. It would be great if the panel really pushed for going beyond that goal. It's going to be very important, and the benefits to communities are great. In addition, I just want to second the comments. I think it was Bob Wyman on the critical importance of investing in the distribution infrastructure to support that distributed generation, and that really has to be prioritized. So thank you all so much for your hard work, and I appreciate the opportunity to make comments.
Thank you, Jen. Next is Isaac Batu, followed by Eric Dawson.
Hello, my name is Isaac Batu. I live in Queens. I used to be anti-nuclear until I started reading more about the technologies. And then I became kind of perplexed as to why more people wouldn't support it. It seems that it's just a case of fear. I'd like to point out a recent study done by the Environmental Defense Fund and the Clean Air Task Force, at least the form of which is very anti-nuclear. But what had occurred is in this study, three independent organizations were given the same data and the same estimates for the cost of battery storage and the decrease in renewable capacity. Just paraphrasing, they're saying that solar energy has much more generation potential in California than it does in other places. And they want to have 100% clean energy by 2045, similar to the CLCPA goal. But what they found was that they would need to build up 500 gigawatts of power generation capacity, which is roughly half of what the entire United States produces right now in all of its coal, natural gas, nuclear, and everything else, just to meet it's an overbuilding capacity for the variability in solar energy. So I'll just read directly from this. It says, this excess capacity would be expensive. We estimate that wholesale electricity rates would increase by about 65% over today if renewable energy and concurrently available storage technologies alone were used to meet demand in 2045. Furthermore, even if consumers were willing to pay that premium, it may simply not be possible to build renewable facilities at this scale. Getting to nearly 500 gigawatts by 2045 would require expanding solar capacity at a rate 10 times higher than has ever been done before. There may not be enough people, supplies, or land to do this. Now, of course, according to the IPCC, nuclear uses less land, less concrete, and less mining than solar does. So if you actually want to get a high-density power source that is reliable, I think mixing renewables with nuclear is your best bet to offset fossil fuels. Because if we just want to feel good about what we're doing in virtue signal, that's fine. And if that's what you're doing in projecting your insecurities on the rest of the world, I understand. But the facts and the numbers bear out that nuclear is more environmentally friendly, according to the IPCC and according to many reports, including the MIT report that was listed earlier, and now this California study using three separate organizations that are historically kind of anti-nuclear, but without sort of, you know, pushing it too far, it's clear that a mix is the most sane solution to go forward. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Isaac. Next will be Eric Dawson, followed by Tara Vamos. Eric, are you there? Eric, I can hear your mic queuing, but I am not able to hear you speak. I think we'll move on for right now, and hopefully we can get the microphone issue sorted out. So why don't we move on to Tara Vamos for right now?
Hi there. My name is Tara Vamos. I'm a member of local Climate Smart Phillipstown group and a member of New York Renews. And I just wanted to speak very strongly in favor of the stopping of all building or, quotes, repowering of fossil fuel generation systems. If that signal could come incredibly clearly from this panel, it would be very helpful. And I know that Senator Metzger had referred to the fact that there needs to be a large public campaign to get people on board and know what people are doing. And I just wanted to say that right now there are a large number of people that are very motivated, that spend a lot of time fighting one after another fossil fuel generation plant that is not wanted in their community, or gas pipelines that are not wanted in their community. The Williams pipeline just got reopened as an application. The Danskammer site that is looking to, it's not looking to repower, they're looking to build a new generation system. There were, I think, over 500 people signed up for public comment. It could have been more. They were only able to hear 170. I think 186, 178 to 13 was 178 people speaking against it to 13 people speaking for it. There are so many people spending so much time playing whack-a-mole trying to get rid of fossil fuel projects, and they would be working to move us to renewable, like to having people understand how we can move into a renewably powered future if they weren't spending time fighting off fossil fuel infrastructure. And I also think that it would be great if there was more distributed generation, and also that we might need to look creatively on how to get people to actually cut down and reduce their power usage. Efficiency is great, but so is just doing less. It's very effective as a way of, like, having more power is just use less of it. Thank you guys all for so much for your work. Like, this is, it's been an incredible, I only got to see the first hour and a half of the meeting, but I'm so excited about most of the things that you guys have put forward. So thank you so much for working on this. And that's it.
Thank you, Tara. Eric, are you able to, is your mic working now?
Can you hear me now?
Yes, I can. After Eric, yeah? Okay, great. Lynn Brunning.
Okay, in the context of rising demand for reliable electricity, that's why we're all here, through electrifying buildings and all cars in the near future, the main CLCPA goal is by 2040 achieve 100% zero emission electricity. The key phrase here is zero emission electricity. Very simply, the goal of the CLCPA is to dramatically increase zero emission electricity. But the specific method of achieving that goal should be irrelevant. A moratorium on new gas plants misses the point that old gas plants, which are obviously not zero emission sources, will remain in existence. Meanwhile, Indian Point is scheduled to be closed at the end of this month, even though nuclear power is the most reliable, efficient, land-conserving, and most importantly, scalable source of zero-emission electricity. As I see it, there are two major categories of technology. There's technology that works today and technology that might work in the future. There's nothing wrong with investing more money in R&D and tech that might work to improve batteries and solar panels and wind turbines, as well as potential carbon capture or hydrogen fuel cells and other technologies. But all that cannot help us scale up zero-emission electricity to the level we need today. Indian Point has provided the majority of downstate New York's zero-emission electricity. This is not negligible, and its upcoming shutdown on April 30th will be, in fact, a huge loss. In terms of carbon emissions per kilowatt electricity and deaths per kilowatt electricity produced, mostly caused by air pollution, nuclear is at the same level as renewables, the same. And I don't blame anyone for being concerned about the safety of any technology, but they must understand that no one has ever died from the storage of nuclear waste. Meanwhile, millions of people around the world have benefited from using cheap, reliable electricity from nuclear power while breathing clean air because of it. And I'll just say, as we all know, Governor Cuomo was the hero of the world last year in 2020, and now he is not. So just because you take a popular position today and get praise from a minority of certain influential legacy environmentalist orgs does not mean you will reap political rewards in the future. This kind of popularity is fleeting. Everyone here has a great opportunity to rise above petty tribalism and proudly proclaim, I firmly stick to the science, I don't overstate my case, and I simply want to solve problems. According to all available evidence, to be successful realistically, nuclear needs to be a part of any effort to dramatically increase zero-emission electricity, which is the primary goal of the CLCPA. Thank you.
Thank you, Eric. Next is Lynn Brunning, followed by Richard Fennelly.
Hi, Lynn Brunning, fifth generation, Duanesburg, Schenectady County, New York. Thank you for the time to speak. I am concerned that the Climate Action Council as a whole fails to consider our rural disadvantaged communities who are among those most impacted by the state's choice to adopt widespread construction of thousands of land-intensive, weather-dependent solar and wind energy resources. New York State legislation has stripped away rural taxpayers' rights to determine their own future. Home rule and individual property rights have been diminished by Article 10, Section 94C, Real Property Tax Law 575B, and other legislation. To generate 1 megawatt of solar energy requires approximately 4 acres of land and uses about 3,000 solar panels. 6,000 megawatts will cover approximately 24,000 acres with more than 17 million solar panels. Once the utility companies construct these solar and wind energy resources, there is little, if any, opportunity for the use of the land for farming, commercial, or residential development, the conservation of that land, or tourism. The siting of these power plants is associated transmission lines, both existing and new, limits and possibly prohibits our rural towns from implementing taxpayer-directed comprehensive plans and land use policies. The government's claims of an emergency should not necessitate a rush to build on prime lands, cut mature growth trees, and remove legal rights from the rural landowners and rural disadvantaged communities. We also pay into the state's tax system. I request that all the members of the Climate Action Council consider the industrialization of rural disadvantaged counties. How will your recommendations impact these taxpayers that are well below the state's education, employment, and poverty levels? Please thoughtfully consider and examine the Environmental Conservation Article 75. Does it adequately define disadvantaged communities to encompass the rural poor who are undereducated and underemployed? These are the people who are among those most impacted by the state's rush to adopt land-intensive and weather-dependent solar and wind energy resources. The council is tasked with reducing greenhouse gas. That is your goal. It is important that the council question its own dogma and consider all fuel options that would provide abundant, affordable, and reliable electricity while reducing greenhouse gas? Is it wise to put all of the fuel production eggs into one renewable basket? In order to understand...
I apologize, Lynn. Sorry, we have more speakers to get to, and we're over time.
Thank you.
Next is Richard Fennelly, followed by John Rath.
Very much. This is Richard Fennelly. I work for a startup company, CoilPod LLC. We're in northern Westchester County. My email is richard@coilpod.com if anybody wants more information about what I'm going to talk about. Cooling equipment, both refrigeration and AC, represents a huge waste on the electric utilities everywhere in the world. Con Edison has a metastatic energy cancer in New York City from poorly maintained AC and refrigeration units. Commercial refrigeration is an absolute disaster. I'm talking about the fact that owners rarely do heat transfer coil cleaning. They often do not replace dirty filters. It's mundane preventative maintenance. The Carbon Trust, ASHRAE UK, and the International Refrigeration Institute did a study in 2018. They concluded that globally, the unneeded indirect power plant emissions yearly are 500 million metric tons of CO2 equivalent. Extrapolating that down to New York City, as an example, gives a figure of 8.5 million metric tons of unneeded emissions in New York City from dirty AC and refrigeration. That's 25% of the city's stationary energy emissions. We have approached Con Edison on multiple occasions. They do not want to talk about it. We have talked to New York City Climate, the sustainability folks in New York City, a year ago, August. We gave them these figures. No response. This is something that needs to be coordinated with the energy efficiency and housing panel. But no matter what you do on the generation side that's good, there's tremendous waste from cooling equipment that's not maintained. Again, New York City, I gave some numbers. It represents wasting 11.4 billion kilowatt hours a year. And that turns into wasting natural gas going to electric generation. That's 39.4 billion cubic feet of natural gas. That's 9.5% of all gas going for electric generation is being flushed down the toilet because folks don't do preventative maintenance on cooling. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Richard. Next is John Rath, followed by Eric Meyer.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, I can.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the opportunity to comment. I'm a member of New York Geothermal Association. And it always surprises me and interests me that people comment on lots of seemingly credible studies. Some that conflict with each other and counter each other. So I don't envy your panel in trying to sort through all that good stuff. In terms of a couple issues on nuclear, I'd like to make a comment, and it's a different perspective. After 30 years of a career in Texas, I think the people in West Texas, Andrews County, where the nuclear waste is being dumped in very inefficient and unsafe disposal places, would have a very different opinion about the value of nuclear as it sits upon the largest freshwater aquifer in the country, the Ogallala. So that's just something to keep in mind. And as far as green hydrogen, I think in theory it sounds really good and may have limited application. But I wish someone could show me the real hard data that that indicates whether or not during the transport and the production we have leakage that creates greenhouse gases. I haven't seen any of that hard data, just lots of credible theory, I guess, at this point. And finally, from a common sense standpoint, I'd like to see us focus our efforts solely on what we know works: demand reduction, beneficial electrification, and clean energy. Thanks a lot for letting me comment.
Thank you, John. Next is Eric Meyer, followed by Amber Ruther.
Hello there. Yes, Eric Meyer. I'm from Generation Atomic. We're an international NGO in support of saving the largest source of carbon-free emissions in North America and Europe, which is nuclear, just with the realization that as nuclear plants shut down, we are at best treading water against the climate crisis. I think I'll just maybe address the previous commenter. Number one, this happens constantly, so I can't blame anybody for it, but the constant conflation of waste products from nuclear weapons production and waste products from nuclear energy. The site he's talking about in Western Texas is related to the Savannah River site. It goes back to kind of Cold War era nuclear weapons production, and I realize it's pretty tempting to use that as an argument against nuclear power, but it isn't factual. We store nuclear waste much differently from power, and indeed it has never harmed anyone. And also, the previous commenter said we should focus on what we know works. And we do have some really good examples of what works if we look around the world. France, Sweden, even just north of us in Ontario, we've seen these large regions with industrialized economies totally decarbonize their electricity grid in under 15 years and do it at a very, very affordable price. So, we should be looking to them. If we want to way forward here. I actually crunched the numbers, how long it would take New York to decarbonize going as fast as Sweden in their nuclear build-out, which is the world's fastest for nuclear, and Denmark, which is the world's fastest for renewables. For renewables, it's just shy of 30 years, 27 years, if we go as fast as the world record Denmark. For nuclear, it's just over 8 years if we go as fast as Sweden. So we should look at what worked and draw conclusions from that. And I know it's going to close in a week after Earth Day this month, but losing Indian Point is a huge setback. So thank you.
Thank you, Eric. Next is Amber Ruther.
Hello. My name is Amber Ruther, and I'm here representing NYC Democratic Socialists of America and Alliance for a Green Economy. We need a ban on new fracked gas infrastructure now. Anything short of that will not allow New York to meet the emissions reductions and renewable energy targets of the CLCPA. In just 19 years, New York must have no fossil fuel plants in our electric sector to meet the mandate of zero emissions in the electric sector by 2040. There are already several proposals for new fracked gas plants in New York, including NRG's plant in Astoria and the Danskammer plant in Newburgh. Communities across New York resoundingly do not want these plants, and hundreds of people have already testified against them. What's more, NYSO analysis have proven that these plants are not actually needed to meet energy demands, and they're only being pushed to inflate the profits of fossil fuel companies. We also know that these plants will last for decades past our climate targets and will either lock us into climate destruction or will be shut down early, leaving ratepayers to foot the bill for millions of dollars in stranded assets. The transition to our 100% renewable grid with no fossil fuels is desperately needed. It is mandated and it is inevitable. Why delay the inevitable? Is allowing gas companies to continue to profit from poisoning our communities for 5 more years really more important than meeting the targets we need to save our planet? If we decide to keep kicking the can down the road, it will only make the transition exponentially more rapid, difficult, and costly, and it will make it harder to provide a just transition for environmental justice communities and fossil fuel industry workers who need to be retrained. We also need to stop investing in false solutions like so-called green hydrogen and renewable natural gas, an unproven carbon capture and storage technology. Renewable natural gas comes from landfills, wastewater systems, and factory farms, and it is not clean. It is methane, which is around 86 times worse for the climate than carbon dioxide on a 20-year time frame. Similarly, truly green hydrogen technology doesn't even exist yet. It damages pipes, and it's so expensive that it will likely never be feasible on a large scale. It's just a ploy by fossil fuel companies and utilities to enable them to keep building pipelines for as long as possible. We also need to stop subsidizing nuclear plants. New Yorkers are currently being forced to bail out Exelon by around $1.6 million per day, and that amount will reach $7.6 billion total by 2029, which is a number over 100 times greater than what the PSC originally estimated. Nuclear energy is more expensive than utility-scale wind and solar, and its costs are only rising while the costs of wind and solar are plummeting. Nuclear takes too long to build, and it just doesn't make economic sense anymore. Nuclear often blows far over budget and past construction timelines. Nuclear is also not safe, clean, or renewable, and creates unacceptable risks to our health and safety due to uranium mining, routine radioactive leaks, and radioactive waste, which we have no viable plan to store safely for thousands of years. Instead of subsidizing these failed plants, we should redirect that money to the most cost-effective, safe, and proven climate solutions, including wind, solar, storage, energy efficiency, and demand response. We know it can be done. Allowing new gas plants...
Thank you, Amber. Okay. I apologize for that time. With that, I think we are unfortunately at time. I know there are unfortunately a few more commenters left, but as before, we recommend that and please invite you to submit your comments and any other further comments that folks who did have an opportunity to speak to powergenpanel@dps.newyork.gov. On behalf of the panel, I thank everyone for taking the time to join us for this panel meeting and for providing their input. This input is very valuable for developing the recommendations from this panel, and we appreciate your continued engagement with this process. Beth, have a good afternoon.
Yes, thank you, Jeremy.
Thank you.
I appreciate this. Thank you, panel members, and thank you, members of the public who have joined us today. We'll see you next time. Take care.
Thank you, Sarah, and everybody.
Well, you can email your comments or save them to another meeting. I think Thursday's meeting is public comments also.
Oh, okay. I want the other people who are commenting to hear another opinion from upstate New York. I feel underrepresented, to say the least.
Well, upstate New York is underrepresented. I couldn't have asked for somebody better to go first in front of me, so.
Yes.
He's like, what the fuck are you doing?
Yes.
So, and I put the link to my map in the chat window. And I just said, you know, to really understand how many people you're impacting, here's a map of the queue.
lot of the meetings. But my map is coming really handy. So, all right, I'm gonna clean up my text and send that in. I'm gonna work on the thing I sent you last night and get that in. And then I looked at the legislation, you know, because I got questioning, what is their goal? Well, their goal is to reduce greenhouse gas. And it appears, like, when I look at the legislation and I see all that green text, is that added, like, right before the vote? Like, if I could figure that out, because that's where this 6,000 megawatts comes in. That's where all the bullshit happens. Because otherwise it's just, your goal is to reduce greenhouse gas. And then all of a sudden it's like, all of a sudden, renewable. And the failure to include nuclear or renewable is... I don't think it was there to begin with, though, was it? Did people have to fight to get that? Did you read his press release this morning?
No, I didn't.
Rebuild, renew, and something. I was just like, oh man, you had that totally queued up and ready to go. I assume you have a dead battery.
Yeah, I'm not too easy for you. It's so fucking stupid. You need to look at this stuff. Please view this. Thousands of souls. Please view this map. Thank you for your time and consideration. Is it wise?
Ooh, show me. Okay, right now, wind is generating. This is how much right now, according to the ISO. Are y'all looking at this shit? Power generation.